Hello and welcome to the Hotchkiss and Wiley podcast series. It's Wednesday, November 18th, and my name is John Hasse. Today I'm joined by Stan Major, who is a portfolio manager and member of the energy sector team here at Hotchkiss and Wiley. Stan has 27 years of industry experience, with the past 24 of those being here at the firm. The energy sector has clearly been out of favor for much of the past few years, and particularly this year as a result of the COVID-induced economic slowdown. I will be speaking with Stan about the challenges he's seen in the space, but more importantly about the opportunity as we look ahead. But first, a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of November 18th, 2020. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, H&W reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. So Stan, why don't we go ahead and start off by having you give our audience a brief overview of your experience covering energy companies and how you've seen this space evolve over the years.
Thanks, John. So first, I would say, after covering the energy sector for close to 25 years, one thing is the framework that we use to evaluate energy as well as any other industry. And I think the concept that I'd like to talk about first is intrinsic value. What is intrinsic value? Intrinsic value is the present value of future cash flows. It's what a security is worth. It's whether it's a stock or a bond, it's going to be worth the present value of its future cash flows. Now, at different points in time, securities can trade at much different levels relative to their intrinsic value. If you're trading above intrinsic value, a lot can go wrong. We've seen that in the past, whether it's a bubble crashing or just an expensive stock. In order to have a positive return when something is trading above its intrinsic value, the thing you really need is somebody to push the price higher than it is today. And you need to be able to get out before it goes back down to what it's actually worth. Personally, I think most of the market is trading above its intrinsic value. And I like to focus on areas where securities are trading below their intrinsic value. And the reason for that is because when you're trading below intrinsic value, a lot can go right. Simplistically, one thing that can happen is the market realizes that the security is trading below where it should be, and you get a very positive return above the market. Additionally, though, you can have companies create a lot of value through share repurchase below intrinsic value. Mergers and acquisitions are very accretive to shareholders. So we think that energy today is trading below its intrinsic value. We think that a lot of the market is trading above its intrinsic value. You know, why is the market distorted today, both for energy and other parts of the market? There's a variety of reasons, none of which we know for sure, but buyers and sellers really aren't focused on valuation. You've got a lot of ETF trading, trend following, options hedging, you name it. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence for all of these things. But at the end of the day, over the long period of time, intrinsic value is a very important concept. And if you're trading well below intrinsic value, which we think the energy market is today, a lot can go in your favor.
Stan, can you talk about current supply and demand dynamics and how that may compare to prior years? We've seen some pretty interesting price action this year between Brent and WTI crude. So just curious on what your thoughts are in terms of production and if you see that ramping up to where we were prior to the COVID outbreak.
Sure. So prior to the COVID outbreak, I think the most important part of your question is supply and demand. It's the interaction of the two that is the most important. It's not one or the other. Prior to COVID, we were seeing demand for energy, specifically oil, growing with the population and also the wealth effect in emerging markets. So demand was growing 1 to 1.5%. And then on the supply side, almost all of it was coming from the United States. We saw what we thought was a market that was probably going to tighten up on its own, and then COVID hit. So what does the market look like today? Initially, demand was off a lot for oil, but what we've seen is supply is off much more. How do we know that? The interaction between supply and demand is inventories, and inventories are declining at a very rapid rate. So we know that demand is higher than supply. We expect the inventory levels that we built up early on in COVID to be gone in probably 6 to 12 months. The question is, what does supply and demand look like after that? So once we are clearing the market, What do we envision for demand? No one knows with certainty where it's going to go. We think it'll be probably slightly more or slightly less than it was in 2019. The bigger question is on supply. When we use the rules of thumb of the oil market, it's important to remember that the hydrocarbon market for oil and natural gas, it's a depleting asset. If you don't drill more wells, you'll have less production in the future. And so we look at decline rates. If you used a rule of thumb that the U.S. is about 15% of liquids production and has, if you include the conventionals and everything else, probably a 25% decline rate, that means the U.S. in terms of world demand is declining at almost 4% of world demand. The other 85% is probably, if you thought about a 5% decline rate, that would mean that that part of the world is declining a little over 4%. If you add the two together, it would mean that the world is declining at about 8%. That's one of the highest decline rates the world has ever had in terms of production, and we're at one of the highest levels of production we've ever had. So we really need to spend a lot of money to keep supply up. When we look around the world, we don't think we're spending enough to keep capacity up. We think that if you look internationally, 50 to 60, 70% of the spending that needs to take place to hold supply flat for the long run. In the U.S., we're way, way below that. But even if you thought about levels 50 to 60%, you're still talking about decline rates of 3 to 4% that are not currently being covered by spending. So we think the big question is, what will supply look like in future years? And it could get very tight relative to demand. And then the question becomes, well, what would it take to change that? Why don't people just start spending more? And we think that there's a number of reasons for that. One, if you think about internationally, offshore, those are very long lead time projects. So offshore, it can take 5 to 10 years from discovery of an oil deposit to production. Not a lot of spending is taking place with a 5 to 10 year lead time. In the U.S., we think you need four things to grow production. You need geology. There's a question whether there is a lot of the rock needed to really grow production. We think there probably is. You need a higher price because the economics aren't that great right now. You need capital. So unconventional, or also known as shale wells, they'll burn a lot of cash if you're trying to grow that. If you're not trying to grow, you can actually generate a lot of free cash flow. But to grow, you need a lot of money going in, and there's really no access to capital. So banks are no longer lending. The high yield market is closed. The equity market is closed. So there's not a lot of capital. And then you need desire. You need managements to actually want to grow their business. So we don't think right now you have many of those four possibilities. So you do probably have the geology, but you don't have the price, you don't have the capital, and you don't have the desire of managements.
Stan, over the many years of experience that you have in this space, you've probably never seen sentiment as poor as it has been the past few years as a result of electric vehicles, the potential for a Green New Deal, and green energy altogether. How do you factor all of that into your analysis as you look ahead?
Sure. I would agree. This is the most negative I've seen sentiment in the past 25 years. So, and if you think of that period, you saw the fall of the Soviet Union. You saw OPEC flooding the market. You've seen the Asian financial crisis, the global financial crisis. And I would say today, the sentiment is probably worse than it's ever been. It's important to quantify those things. So sentiment is one thing, but the facts behind it are more important. That will drive the intrinsic value of these businesses. So if you think about sentiment, the sentiment is we're oversupplied. We can actually look at inventories and realize we're undersupplied. The sentiment is that these companies can't generate free cash flow. And at the bottom of the cycle, they're generating free cash flow. With electric vehicles, the Green New Deal is going to require a lot of financing. And so you have to believe that that capital is going to be available. I think that there's a question around that. But and you go specifically to electric vehicles, this is probably the easy one just to analyze. People think that given the sales of Teslas, that it's going to have an immediate impact on oil demand. It moves much slower than I think people would expect. So if you thought about the light-duty vehicle market, it's probably about 40% of oil demand. If you think about the life of a car, it's probably 15 years. So talking about, under 7% of the vehicle fleet around the world turns over. If you thought about the overall market today of electric vehicles, it's 5%. When you multiply 40% by under 7% by 5%, you know, you come up with, you know, about 0.1% of demand is destroyed each year by electric vehicles. It's a very, very small amount, and it's a rounding error. So, you know, we think it's important to quantify sentiment. We think that electric vehicle sales will certainly increase. But again, given the amount of time it takes for the car fleet to turn over, the overall market share of sales, and just the size of the light-duty vehicle fleet, it can take much longer to have a significant impact than most people think. And we think what is being overlooked as everyone is speaking about electric vehicles and potentially the weakness in demand is that, you know, supply can be much weaker and the market can tighten, even if the penetration of electric vehicles is much higher than we would expect.
At this point, then, company management mindset is really shifted to free cash flow generation from production. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So if you think about the industry in terms or a company in terms of a balance sheet, there's the left side, which are your assets, and the right side, which is how you finance those assets, either through creditors or shareholders. Historically, E&P companies, exploration and production companies, the ones that produce the oil or natural gas, have focused heavily on the left side of the balance sheet. They wanted to make that as big as possible, grow their assets, grow their production, et cetera. That destroyed a lot of shareholder value in it. They did that through levering up the businesses and also issuing equity, and not a lot of money was made. The focus has shifted dramatically to the right side of the balance sheet. So instead of burning cash and bulking up the left side, you're now using free cash flow to delever the business, so to pay back banks, and also return capital to shareholders. We think that shareholders are going to be rewarded with businesses that are less levered, growing at a slower rate in terms of production, which should tighten up the market, and be able to deliver free cash flow to shareholders. If you look today, the free cash flow yields are very high. We think at the bottom of the cycle, they're 10 to 15%. There's also a lot of options that you're getting by owning these businesses. Interestingly, consolidation happens at the bottom of the cycle, and it creates a lot of value. You don't want to see a lot of M&A at the top of the market because people are going to destroy value. But at the bottom of the market, there's a lot of opportunity to create value. If you think about it today, and you use a proxy of synergies that people talk about in transactions, if you looked at the market cap of some smaller companies and you look at how much G&A they're spending, their general administrative expenses, it can be 15% of the market cap. If you were to capitalize that and you were able to realize synergies either in the form of lower operating costs or lower G&A, you can get a present value that is 50 to 100% of the market caps of the companies that are being acquired. You know, we think that there's going to be a lot of M&A activity. We think it's going to be done a lot with stock so that you're left with the ability to participate and continue to participate in the upside, but you've got a much better business than you started with. So we think all of the things managements are likely to do would be buy back stock, by other companies will create a lot of value given where valuations are today.
When you look at energy companies, are you specifically interested in E&P or do you have any interest in services or other areas of the energy market? I guess the question is, you know, what companies are going to be able to deliver the most shareholder value?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of areas in energy that are undervalued. I think personally, the most undervalued part is probably exploration and production. You know, why is that? I think for a combination of reasons. One, it's complicated. It's just not easy to analyze these businesses. The accounting is difficult. How they book reserves is difficult. The assets are difficult to understand. So there creates a lot of distortions in the market. We can find a lot of opportunities where we're getting a world-class asset for free. We think services and refining and marketing, there are some opportunities there for sure. But I would say I personally would favor the E&Ps. But in general, energy is very interesting.
Is it the E&P companies that have the ability to deliver more share repurchases? Is there a preferred method of shareholder value creation that you typically look for?
Sure, that's a great question, and it's controversial in the industry, and it really shouldn't be. What do we encourage managements to do? I like to use a simple analogy. It's a shoebox. If you knew there was $1,000 in a shoebox and you had a partner, And you each own 50% of that shoebox. You have several options. You know the shoebox is worthless, but the $1,000 is worth $1,000. So if you were to dividend it out, each partner gets half, your share would be worth $500. There's no change in the value for either party. If you were instead to buy out your partner, it will have a significant effect depending on the price you pay. We would argue that energy stocks are so inexpensive that there's a lot of value to be created by share repurchase. Simplistically, share repurchase doesn't work when you're buying out your partner at too high of a price. So if I were to pay you $750 for your share or my partner's share of the shoebox, I'd be overpaying for the $500 I know it's worth. That's actually destroyed value, and I'm left with owning 100% of a shoebox that only has $250 in it. I've actually destroyed half the value of what I'm left with. On the other end of the spectrum, in a market that is distorted and you can buy well below what a business is worth, you can actually, if your partner is willing to sell it for $250, you could buy their share out and you'd be left with 100% of the shoebox, which has $750 in it. You've actually created a 50% return simply by buying back your stock. And when we look at today's market, intrinsic value is a concept that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. It is somewhat difficult to apply it to because commodity prices, the future is uncertain. We think they're probably at low levels. So if we start there, are these stocks undervalued? With 10 to 15% free cash flow yields at probably the bottom of the cycle, that's probably some of the best in the market. And you get the option that the market tightens, which we think it will. And so you could end up with significantly higher free cash flow yield. So you're earning 10 to 15% at the bottom. You can get 20% or more in the future in a tighter market. You have the option to create value through mergers and acquisitions. So we think these are stunningly undervalued, well below their intrinsic value, which is when share repurchase is the most powerful. So we would encourage all of the companies that we own, as opposed to dividending out, where, again, it doesn't create or destroy value. It's like buying back your stock at a fair price. Given that these stocks are so far below a fair price, we would encourage them to buy back stock.
Following up on intrinsic value, with the balance sheet mindset of company management's changing, how do you actually assess what a company's intrinsic value is or what their future normal earnings potential looks like?
Sure. As I mentioned, it's somewhat more difficult in the energy market, which is why I think you're getting these opportunities. So we look at the free cash flow yields. As I mentioned, they're very high. We look at assets that are not currently producing and try to figure them out. In a lot of cases, we think we're getting them for free. And then just a very simple way of thinking about it is we obviously believe that the market should tighten here and that being in the energy business should be a much better business than it was in the past. You know, if you thought about it, does it make sense for somebody listening to this podcast to go out and drill their own wells? We would argue that it might, but what is probably a better opportunity is actually buying the securities. You can buy a company, either their debt or in some cases their equity, you know, at $5 a barrel. So what would it cost you to actually drill a new well? Significantly more than that. So, you know, maybe $11 a barrel. So you can buy things in the stock market or the credit market today, get pretty high returns as you wait. And with the knowledge that you're actually doing this below what it would cost for somebody to drill a similar well. So we think those are all indicative that the market is significantly undervalued and you're creating an option for a significantly higher price in the future.
Thanks, Dan. We've certainly seen some improved price performance across the energy sector the past few weeks. So the market is coming around to the sector once again, but we're far from where we were. How long do you think it will take for the market to realize the true value being created by these businesses?
It's a great question. You never really know when intrinsic value is going to be realized. As much as we'd like to believe that very low valuations will be realized very quickly, we really don't know what the timing is, but eventually it historically always has. So if we can get a 10 to 15% return at the bottom of the cycle to sit around, that's a very good return, particularly in the current environment where interest rates are very low. We think that there's the opportunity to get that 20 to 40% free cash flow yield, which means that the share prices should go up a lot to get to a similar free cash flow yield to the market. But what are some of the catalysts? We think mergers and acquisitions, so companies buying the companies that we own, We'd like that to be done with stock where we can participate in the new enterprise where most likely it will be more efficient and have an even better investment opportunity and investment characteristics in the future. Also, mentality can change. So today, if you think about the market, it's at close to all-time highs. It's at a very high multiple of earnings. The parts of the market that have done well are certainly not hedges against inflation. But if you think globally what's going on, there's a lot of money being printed. We haven't seen inflation in a long period of time. If people actually just became worried about inflation and wanted to gain some protection against that, that can lead to a lot of performance of the energy sector. It's a very, very small market cap percentage of the S&P 500. I think some of the numbers I've seen are about 2%. So if 98% of the market moves a little bit into energy, that can have a very, very big effect. Additionally, if the Middle East was to become unstable, it also provides some protection against that. So those are the potential catalysts. One is just the absolute valuations. Two would be mergers and acquisitions. Three, people desiring to get a hedge against inflation. And four, if something were to erupt in the Middle East, this provides some hedge against that.
Well, speaking of the Middle East, what do you see on the horizon following Joe Biden's presumptive win? For instance, are you concerned about a stricter regulatory environment or the potential for more Iranian crude if sanctions are eased?
Sure. So it's always difficult to figure out U.S. politics and what that'll eventually mean for production in the United States or in foreign policy, what that will mean with sanctions. We think that the Iranian sanctions, eventually we think that production will come back onto the market. It won't stay off forever. The question becomes, you know, when and will the declines that we see in other parts of the world offset what we need possibly from Iran? In the U.S., we think that the restrictions might be on federal lands. That would be a benefit to the oil market overall. Obviously, the companies that have federal lands, that would hurt. But outside of that, if you limit supply, it creates a tighter market. We think at the end of the day, there are some modest negatives and some modest positives. And we think it doesn't no matter what way it goes, it might have a short run impact. But we don't think it has a long run impact on our thesis.
Thanks, Dan. Any final thoughts before we go?
Now, I would just say in summary, what do we think the opportunity is in the energy market? It's very rare that you get businesses that are this far dislocated from their intrinsic value. We think that that is a huge opportunity, one, because the valuations are so low, but also the mindset of management in E&P has changed so much in such a short period of time that we think a lot of value can be created. Given that share prices are so low, bond prices in a lot of cases are low, management teams can create a lot of value by buying back their stock, paying down their debt, and that creates not only returns for shareholders, but a tighter market for energy. So we think, you know, while it's become such a small part of the market, it probably has one of the brightest outlooks out there, even though in general, people will paint a pretty gloomy picture for it. When you go through the data, it really shows that you have a tremendously undervalued area where there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of dislocations, which is great for an active manager.
Well, with the vaccine news that's come out the last couple of weeks, there's certainly a lot of hope out there today that there wasn't even 3 weeks or particularly 6 months ago. So with that, Dan, we thank you and we thank our audience for their interest in Hotchkiss & Wiley. For further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926. Thank you.